politics that I know best. So what I'm saying is Russia has tried to avoid coming to this point. And when President Putin said in Beijing a few hours ago, I'm not threatening, of course he was. So let's just go back to what is obvious. On the one hand, Hamas exercised its right of self-defense with violence proportional to the violence used against its statehood as government of the Gaza. Second, it reserves the all the means to go on defending itself, which includes hostage taking, because that's been done to it as well. Second, we have Hezbollah, the Iranian-supported force and political party in Lebanon. They are capable of a higher level of military force opening the northern front. At the same time, Syria, I'm giving you geography here, and I'm telling you what's obvious. Syria has the capability to open a significant force against the Golan Heights. I've been there. You can see what the Israelis do on the top of the heights. You can see the destruction and, let's call it, enforced demilitarization of the plain, the Syrian plain, between Damascus and the Golan, visibly. And it's not a territory in which you can approach on the ground. There's no cover. On the other hand, the capability of Syria and Iranian forces who are supporting Syria in the attempt to conserve Syrian sovereignty can open a Golan front. Protecting those fronts from Israeli air attack are the Russian S-400 missiles and air force based in Khmeimim, and the small but potent Russian squadron, that's two very well-armed corvettes and an intelligence ship that remain the Tartus fleet, and they're at sea. And we've talked about that in the tweets. So you have the capability of the Arabs, if they can coordinate, if they can plan effectively in secret, if they have enough time to marshal the most effective force to open more than one northern front. Okay? And they could do it, I'm speaking speculatively, I'm speaking theoretically, tactical options, strategic options, they can do it under Russian anti-aircraft missile protection or lacking it. And what has the Iranian position been in this situation? Well, we know that Mr. Amir Abdullahian, I'm sorry, I don't speak Farsi, so we'll call him Amir Abdullahian, the foreign minister of Iran, has ended his tweet stream with the statement after the Gaza hospital attack, time is over, meaning that earlier Amir Abdullahian had said, we can pursue what we can at the UN, meaning the Russian proposal for immediate ceasefire and a cessation of indiscriminate Israeli attacks against civilian targets. I'm quite sure that when President Raisi of Iran spoke to President Putin in the Kremlin before Putin left for China, he told Putin, look, we don't think the UN move will succeed. The Americans will veto it. And the Europeans too, if it comes to that. But go ahead. That's, in my view, what the Iranian-Russian conversation on the telephone was about recently. It would have been reinforced below the presidential level by the contacts between Amir Abdullahian and Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, and below that at the working level of ambassadors and deputy ministers. How much coordination, how much joint thinking, how much tactical thinking is going on is a secret. It has to be a secret. And I don't know what that secret is. However, there's been enough movement to show the Iranians said, go to the UN, but if that fails, we told you so. Then we've got we reserve the capability, the military capability, meaning Hezbollah and Syria, meaning Golan Heights, meaning the northern front of Israel, for those forces to pursue what they decide to do. So that's what I've tried to put in the Twitter stream that people, that readers can check if they would like. But where are we now? Well, Amir Abdullahian said time is over after the Gaza hospital incident and before the UN threw out the Russian, all attempts by Russia to reach a civilized ceasefire and a civilized stop to Israeli destruction of Gaza. So what will the Iranians do next? Well, they're not going to tell everybody. They understand, like any intelligent military person understands, the time for words has ended. We're at war. All of us are at war. So what Hezbollah will do next, what the Syrians will do next, what the Russians may or may not do if Israel goes up in the air to try to attack, as they did, Aleppo airport and Damascus airport without being shot down by a Russian S-400, which is more than capable of dealing with the bloated Israeli Air Force superiority complex. The only reason they do what they do is because they have had relied on an agreement between Netanyahu and Putin that Russia will not provide that kind of missile cover for Israel to attack Syrian targets. That's been in effect since the Israelis arranged the ambush of the Russian Il-20 surveillance aircraft back in, I think, 2018, and 15 Russian airmen were killed. This is very clearly remembered by the General Staff. We've talked about it before. All the dates and all the facts are in the written archive, and my memory is a bit strained at the moment. Mm-hmm. So don't hold me to every fact being accurate. But so where are we? We're in secret territory to prepare either something or nothing.
Well, the Russian ambassador to the Security Council at the UN, Vasily Nebenzia, sorry about that, Vasily, he echoed the Iranian statement saying in this meeting, well, the time for diplomatic metaphors is past, maybe not exactly in the same context, but using the same language. That must have sent a message. And he also said that they were well aware that the Americans would veto, and they put their amendments forward. The amendments were blocked by the Americans, and then the Brazilian resolution was also blocked by the Americans. Being a permanent member, they can veto it. With, you know, the vote is an adornment, it seems. But he said after that, he said that those abstaining or are against these amendments are for bloodshed in the Middle East, and therefore it's your responsibility. He was saying basically there's blood on all of your hands here in the UN Security Council that abstained from these resolutions or voted against them.
Yes, Vasily Nebenzia did the best he could with words to point out that what will happen next will be bloodshed, and it's on the responsibility of the United States, who cast its veto, the UK, which abstained against one of the amendments and abstained in the final resolution vote. The Russians did as much as they could, and now the blood is on the hands of those who know what will happen next. Yes, he did as much as he could. Now, the question is, what did President Putin and President Xi agree to do next in Beijing? That's secret. However, as we said, President Putin spoke of, again, the Russian position, also the Chinese position, that Russia proposes and supports the two-state Palestine-Israel solution. What President Putin didn't say, what President Xi didn't say in Beijing, was the Israelis don't accept it, and neither do the Americans, and that the violence that we now see to create that blue state Netanyahu displayed at the UN last month ends the two-state solution. Putin did dismiss the Trump attempt, the Trump-Kushner attempt, to buy off the Palestinians with some economic incentives to accept apartheid, to accept Bantustan, to accept the loss of a Palestinian state. So in a sense, what Putin is saying is a combination of our principal position is the two-state solution. Our principal position is the U.S. has undermined the two-state solution with rubbish no Arab can accept, and we don't accept it either. So what are we going to do next? President Putin only had to say, I'm deploying Kinjals aimed at the U.S. carrier group.
Yeah, but Kinjals that he'll never use. The Chinese, though, the Chinese ambassador to the U.N. Security Council, he expressed a shock disheartenment at the failure to pass the resolution, and went on to say that the delaying tactics of the Brazilian resolution they went along with the understanding that it that there would be a serious consideration of the amendments that were to be added that Russia had proposed, and then realized that this was just a delaying tactic and that no amendment and no movement had been made by America or was ever, and they were saying implicitly that the Americans never intended that anything should happen. So they wasted those 36 hours that in that time, the Al-Ahli hospital was destroyed with a loss of life of, I don't know what the latest estimates are, close to 1,000 people and maybe more. But they were clearly steamed. The Chinese were clearly steamed. And it was interesting to me to see the African contingents, Mozambique, Ghana, and Gabon, were all four square behind the resolutions. They echoed China's position, maybe not surprisingly. It seemed to illustrate what we've been seeing in the global sense of this so-called emerging multipolar world.
I agree, and it's a very good summary, Chris. You gave a very good summary of the way in which, in a certain sense, the rhetoric, the words used by the Chinese representatives, both today in the UN Security Council, but equally the Chinese foreign ministry as we approach the summit meeting in Beijing. The Chinese have been a wee bit ahead in words of the Russian position. The readiness the Chinese have committed to humanitarian aid to Gaza is on the table. Oddly enough, the Russian position and the foreign ministry issued a statement in the middle of today calling for humanitarian corridors. They didn't say any more than that, but there's been no delivery of humanitarian aid cargoes by the Russian side, usually by the Ministry of Emergencies, to El Arish, the Egyptian airport closest to the Rafah crossing, Why has there been no Russian cargo delivered yet? It's not carelessness. There hasn't been a Chinese cargo delivered to El Arish yet. I guess, and it would be reasonable to understand, the Chinese and the Russian side both want, aim, have the capacity to deliver cargoes. They're not going to stick the cargoes in trucks, which have to be lined up for kilometers back from into Egypt from the Rafah crossing, to get Israeli permission to enter. Israeli permission with an American force offshore to protect it is not there. And the terms we've already explained for Israeli permission for cargoes to enter make it very unlikely that the Chinese and the Russian side will agree to deliver anything. Now, what was not announced was in Beijing was a Xi Putin joint declaration on Gaza. Would it be asking too much to have expected that possibility? I leave it as a question. Politics and war are very serious matters, and you have the two most powerful forces against the United States and NATO keeping their cards to their chests.
Well, I know it's only speculation, and neither, you know, you weren't in the room. I certainly wasn't in the room. But looking at the Chinese ambassador at the UN, he said that this delaying tactics and this lack of action on this issue, on the Gaza issue, was, quote, nothing short of unbelievable. He went on to talk about the hospital bombing, and he said bombing, airstrike. Clearly, an airstrike means Israel, even though there's all these different stories that Israel has put out that this was a misfired rocket from Hamas, et cetera, et cetera. Anybody who's listened to the sound of that bomb coming in, and these bombs have signatures, and people recognize it as being most closely a JDAM bomb, 2,000-pound bomb, that there's video, too, of guys, you know, with warehouses full of them, Israeli IDF, saying these are going to be dropped on Gaza. I mean, you couldn't be more clear than that. So the Chinese have taken a big step further than the Russians. Is it possible that Xi and Putin, this means that they can't come together on a position between them?
It's possible, yes. It's very possible, yes, and President Putin referred to the fact that he and Xi had tea and talked for 2 hours in a constructive and familiar way, said, I haven't got the words right in front of me, that Putin used. But if nothing came out that he wanted to declare, it's quite possible that Xi and Putin disagreed about what to do next and what to say next. But just bear in mind how the Chinese feel. They've been bombed and killed by American aircraft during the so-called NATO bombing of Serbia. Does everybody or does anybody remember that the United States launched two guided missile attacks on the Chinese embassy in Belgrade, which killed
Chinese? But that was all an accident, remember, John? That was an accident.
Thank you for remembering the lying cover story. The lying cover story was that there was an accidental input of the wrong coordinates that caused the U.S. pilots to arm those weapons when they were meaning to arm them in another direction. No Chinese person, no sane, reasonable person came to believe that cover story for the American accident is believable. So the Chinese know two things about the Americans and their guided bombs. One is they will fire them at you, and then second, they will deny that they intended to do. So the Chinese understand very clearly what it's like being a Palestinian. They know very well that it's U.S. guidance for those Israeli bombs, the one that hit the hospital. And it's not just the sound signature. It's the explosive impact. it's very clear, and Jonathan Cook has made this point in print. Others can verify it. The explosive capabilities of Hamas's rockets is far short of what was visible in the Gaza hospital. So,
and those articles, you mentioned Jonathan Cook previously too, and antiwar.com has one of his pieces up, Lawless in Gaza, Why Britain and the West Back Israel's Crimes. That's antiwar.com. His other piece, this is another Iraqi WMD moment, We Are Being Gaslit, is at dissidentvoice.org, dissidentvoice.org. And that's Jonathan Cook, who's been writing out of Israel for many, many years, and former Guardian journalist who was frozen out of that job because of what the Guardian has become. Sorry to interject, John. We're fast running out of time. The Chinese ambassador to the UN Security Council, again, expressing his outrage, said that, well, China is going to craft its own resolution, and it's coming quickly in the next coming days. I didn't hear Russia saying that they were crafting a new resolution or a new amendments to others' resolutions or anything like that. It just seemed to me that the Russian ambassador threw up his hands and said, well, the blood is on your hands. You guys didn't support our resolution amendment to the Brazilian resolution, so it's all on you. It seems to be like a Pontius Pilate moment for Russia, whereas China seems to be still engaged. And I don't know, maybe it was theater, but the Chinese ambassador to the UN, seemed to me to be furious.
Yes, Chris. I don't know if Pontius Pilate is the right guy to be thinking, to be comparing to right now.
Well, they're washing their hands of it.
Look, I'll put in print all the evidence that follows this broadcast of how to assess the pro-Semitic policies that President Putin has defended all these years in a special relationship with Netanyahu. It's a very long record, and it's disagreed with by the general staff, the defense ministry, the GRU military intelligence, the foreign ministry to a large extent, and Russian public opinion. Yesterday afternoon, Moscow time, I checked to see if any other Russian opinion pollster had conducted polls of Russian public opinion on the Palestine-Israel issue. None has, and a new polling company we were in touch with in St. Petersburg, Platforma, said they were busy doing polling, but they were not intending to do any poll of Russian public attitudes to Palestine and to Israel. This is an order throughout Russia from Kremlin not to show that Russian public opinion is overwhelmingly hostile to Israel's murderous and the US's murderous attempts to wipe out Arab Palestine. Russians do understand that. The general staff understands that. But the Kremlin has defended a two-state solution when it's been blown away by the United States and Israel. It's defended a formula for negotiations called the Quartet. The Quartet consists of the United States, the European Union, the UN, and Russia. The Quartet's a nonsense. Why? Yeah, obvious.
That is, to me anyway, that's ancient news. The whole two-state solution has been dead, and the Quartet with it, for years. I can't believe anybody's even considering that. And so finally, John, in our final minute, does this prove to be an Achilles heel for Putin and his popularity in Russia?
Achilles achieved great things in ancient times, and politics comes out of many sides of the mouth, not many sides of your feet or your ankles or your heels. It's not where we're talking at this moment now in a war situation. And things have changed since we last broadcast, since we last were on guerrilla radio. Terrible things have happened, and terrible things will happen. So I'm not going to say that I recognize an Achilles heel here. Putin is a politician who's very sensitive to what other people tell him when they say, "We told you so." And that's what could very well see an abrupt, apparently abrupt change in President Putin's personal position here to abandon the nonsense formula of the quartet, the nonsense formula of the two-state solution. But let's be very clear here. President Putin is not willing to risk world war, which is what's implied when a Kinjal threatens to sink the USS Gerald Ford. That's world war, isn't it? So right now, speaking right now, with a few seconds left, we have to say, not Achilles' heel. Now, Russia is very carefully calibrating. It has the boots, and it knows where the US and Israeli asses are. And with the Chinese, the question is how to put the boot to that arse and protect Arab Palestine and the people of the Gaza. That's the question now. And maybe there'll be a clearer answer when we broadcast next.
Well, there certainly will be if the Gerald Ford goes up and lays waste to the Russian base at TARDIS, which they could easily do in a matter of moments.
They could try to do it. Chris, they can try. Let's just remember that the USS Bismarck Sea went down because it couldn't defend itself against two waves of kamikaze Japanese aircraft. Kamikazes then turn into drones now, and Kinjals go even faster. So the notion that the US can actually attack Russia means world war. And we're much closer to that after the U.S. representative in the U.S. Security Council raised her benighted right arm to veto the only chances of reaching something short of a military solution to saving the lives of Gaza.
Well, John Helmer, there's always way more than we can cover in this venue. Go to johnhelmer.net, John's site, Dances with Bears, to find out more than we can possibly get into this single hour. Thanks a lot, John, for coming on again today. And yes, things are going faster, much faster, too fast. And I expect the next time we talk, if there is such a time, things are going to be different. And I fear for what they'll look like, frankly.
I fear too, Chris, but thanks for having me. Let's hope for a better outcome next time round. But yes, we all should be afraid of what the US and Israel are doing now.
All right, John, till the next time then.
The drones above your head, what were the last words that she said before she joined the thousands dead as the bombs rained down? See the fire in the sky, hear all of the children cry, the tower falls from way up high as the bombs rain down. See the dust rise everywhere. Once it was a building there, then it crashed down from the air as the bombs rained down. Twisted bodies all around, the never-ending buzzing sound, the earthquake shaking all the ground as the bombs rained down. Shattered camps of refugees, necklaces of ancient keys, smell the burning olive trees as the bombs rain down. See the homes, apartment blocks, see the mosques reduced to rocks, feel the awe and feel the shock as the bombs rain down. See the sewage in the street mixed with blood beneath your feet before the sonic boom repeats as the bombs rain down. See the darkness of the night. No power for the lights, but the explosions are so bright as the bombs rain.